The Behind the Bets podcast with Doug Kazarian is presented by DraftKings. Download the app for free today.
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you. This is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. I am Doug Kazarian. We are taping this on Thursday, May 14th, which is the two-year anniversary of PASPA being overturned, the Supreme Court ruling that enabled states to proceed with legalized sports betting. Obviously, a signature day for those in the sports betting world. And I'm not going to say it's one of those you remember where you were when it happened, but I do. Such a significant, we had heard grumblings that it could be headed that way, but it was like an I'll believe it when I see it kind of thing, for at least that was my perspective. And Christina, we're up to 18 legal states right now and operational states. So we're slowly but surely inching our way there.
Slowly but surely.
But it's going to be interesting what happens with the pandemic. Obviously, what's going to happen with the sports world, but I almost wonder with local municipalities needing more revenue, if sports betting will, more states will get there sooner than, you know, without the pandemic, right? Like it's kind of like they can't resist it like they once wanted to.
Yeah. And I honestly think that's a very good point. I think during all of this, we've kind of realized without sports, you know, you need something. And I think a lot of people, you know, you've mentioned before having the itch to get back into betting with sports not really being a thing the past few weeks. I think that's an interesting point.
Yeah, because there is resistance by some states, but at this point, they may not have a choice along those lines. You mentioned the itch, and that's why I'm so excited for this podcast. Table tennis, that is sort of, I wrote about it for ESPN.com's chalk section, and it's been fascinating talking to other odds makers, just how it's sort of, it's taken, you know, kind of a life of its own, if you will. And a lot of different leagues. Up next, Sean Harnish, who is into the Russian table tennis, the professional league, the men's league like I am. He's a pro bettor. First time ever we're going to have him on the podcast. Really excited to break it down. And he and I have communicated a lot in the last couple of days about our favorite players and all that, and just kind of laughing and our tendencies that we see with some of these guys. And we're going to have a conversation about it. And you may think we're crazy, but you may laugh. And it may be both. At our craziness, so you're going to be laughing. But all in all, it's a lot of fun, and I hope everyone listens. Are you excited, Christina?
I am very excited.
All right, let's get to it.
Stop. Hammer time.
Time now to welcome in someone who has never been on the podcast, but when you send a back signal out for ping pong betting, you need only a few people are there, and not all heroes wear capes, as we like to say. Sean Harnish joins us. Sean, how are you, man?
Good, man. Good. It's, you know, if you told me I would be doing this a year ago, I'd laugh at you. That's for sure. But, you know, crazy times call for crazy messages, I guess.
For sure. For sure. Now, we're going to definitely get in to table tennis, roll up our sleeves, so to speak. But just a little bit of background for you, and so our listeners sort of know, like, how long have you been a pro bettor and things along those lines?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think like everybody else, I grew up loving sports, playing sports. I did, you know, I played baseball in college. I majored in sports writing. I got, you know, some cool internships in the Boston area. Always loved sports and, you know, started dabbling with betting on it. Now in the early 90s, it wasn't as easy. You know, if you weren't in Las Vegas, there were some shady sites, or if you knew a bookmaker, you know, you could get it, but it wasn't readily available. So, you know, as a 17, 18 year old kid in college, it wasn't easy to place bets, but I always enjoyed it. And, you know, as time went on, I really got into the analytics of things. I started going to the Sloan Conference in Boston the first year it was there. And when analytics first started popping up, this is before social media. And, you know, if you went around the internet back then, you could find some chat rooms and places that were dedicated to sports betting and stuff. And, you know, so I got involved there. I started betting a lot of baseball with some, making my own lines for college basketball and having a lot of success. And, you know, I was always told, you know, you should do this for a living and how can I get your plays? And like, I never thought about selling plays or anything like that until people came to me and wanted them, because I would always post them. Sometimes I wouldn't in the chat. And so I said, let me give this a try, never thinking it would be full time. But, you know, I took advantage of a weak market at the time, I could say, with lines and with offerings back then, and just started building my bankroll and just really got into it. And I knew that if I dedicated my life to it, I could be much better, because balancing work and, you know, trying to be a handicapper wasn't very easy. And so I was lucky enough to have enough money to take a year off and really dig into it. And it wasn't the greatest year, but I knew if I stuck with it, that things would be good. And, you know, I just kept the most thing. The best thing I ever did was have notebooks and write everything down. It was never much for algorithms and anything like that, but I kept doing it and took it seriously. Money management was the key. I took all of a sudden my third and fourth year in college was all about, you know, money management and everything like that. So I did take it seriously. And here we are 12, 13 years later. And, you know, I quit my job probably 10 years ago now anyway, and living the life, as you say, as people would say, but it's not the glamorous life, that's for sure. I mean, this was probably the COVID thing probably gave me my first 2 days without any quote unquote work in 10 years, you know, Christmas mornings thing. It's always a grind, especially when you have clients that are relying on you. You know, it's Christmas morning, all holidays, you're up and doing it. So I didn't realize how stressed I was about it until there was no sports. It took me, and I'm not even kidding, almost 2 weeks for me to not wake up in a panic thinking, what time is it? Do I need to get plays out? Like, and that really made me like take a step back and say, okay, let me readjust what's going on and get out of this grind. And, you know, I still needed something, and ping pong came along, and I'll tell you, it just sort of sparked that love for betting again and having fun. I think that was definitely the key to even getting involved in that. But that's a little bit about my background. I'm really analytics based. I really love the small conferences and college sports to bet on, because the human aspect, not only the edge you get with the lines, if you know a little bit more about that than the books, but the human aspects involved. You know, we're talking especially Ivy League. There's no kids that are on basketball scholarships. They're playing for the love of the game. And if you can find that where you can bet on the love of the game or the human aspect, I think there's a huge edge you can find there. And I sort of correlate it with ping pong. We'll get into it, but I definitely feel that here. But anyway, in a weird way, this COVID thing really put my life in perspective. And then ping pong came along and showed me how it used to be and why I got into this profession in the first place, because it's a grind, as you know.
Yeah, no, it's a lot to kind of digest there. And thank you for sharing so much. Yeah, I would say, just talking to guys over the years in my own experience, like definitely like money management and bankroll, kind of all that stuff is like such a key thing to all this, because the margins are not huge, right? And so you can't just get sloppy. And I think being meticulous record keeping, that was a big step for me too, to do all that. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, you really, you know, really sort of helps you take the next step, if you will. Okay, so let's get into ping pong. And you and I were talking last night or the other night, and had a very similar sort of approach in terms of how we got involved. Like, you started hearing buzz about it. You're like, all right, let me figure what this all about. And they started wanting to kind of more of just curiosity than like a potential money making opportunity. And then just take me through your experience there.
Yeah. Like you said, it was sort of, you know, seeing the rumblings, you know, and seeing the lines being offered, and the instant gratification bets, I like to call them, you know, where it's like, wow, you watch this and it's like, man, 15 minutes done. It's like a first period bet or whatever it may be. Now in my whole professional mind, it's like, okay, this can be a slippery slope. You know, you got games going on and results every 15 minutes. So, you know, taking a pause back, but looking at it and saying, okay, this is crazy. Cause as you know, if you've seen it, it's just a rec league, it seems like, right? And so I was hesitant at first, but I got into it, started betting it. And, you know, as they say, the first one's always free. Of course, I had a great first day, and then I was on off and running. You know, still not betting like I would anything else, but having fun with it and just intrigued, I think is a good word you used, intrigued at what this was all about.
Well, and like you said, you know, you do something every day. After a few days, it's like nice to unplug, don't get me wrong. But then you're like, all right, I'm missing something here. You need that little act. So, and what we're talking about is the Russian Pro League. So there's basically, and you know, I've done some research. I actually just got off the phone with David Purdom, who does a great job. He's working on a story for this. But basically, there's different leagues, right? There's female, there's male, there's different countries, and there's different leagues. Now, we sort of just coincidentally gravitated to the Russian Pro League. And my gauge, and I really have no expert at all, but like, it's just, it's like the lowest of all these. So, and you can tell by the quality of the broadcast and like the quality of the court and quality of the scoreboard. But basically this looks like pro league, but it's like, I would say definitely like minor leagues. They're not, I went to like the Russian website of table tennis. They're not ranked. They're not on their radar. There's no uniforms. They're wearing stuff that like some guys wear at the local Y. And, it's very bare bones operation, to say the least. And it's been interesting. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And so I just watch these guys, and there's like about three matches at a time all day, and there's about a 4-hour window, which is probably where everyone's sleeping in Russia time. But it is so interesting. And my understanding, and this is, I'm pretty confident that this is what it is. So there's just like tiers or group play, let's call it group play from like 1 to 10 or so, maybe 1 to like 8. And in each group is like a handful of guys, let's say 5 guys, and they all play each other all day, all week. And at the end of, I'm going to say 2 or 3 weeks, there's some relegation going on, but between all the groups. So one guy moves down a group and the other guy moves up a group, like the best of the best and the worst. So there's just more kind of funneling towards competition, and they have like playoffs each day. I think it's like a little bit confusing there. And I've asked around, no one really, but I think that's like the best way. It's group play. So they all know each other really well. And one guy can have another guy's number, the other guy, you know, and it's kind of just the top guys are legit good. And I actually stay away from those matches because it just comes down to a couple points here and there. One guy hits the tape and it either falls over or falls in. You know, it's the margin of error is so small, and there's really, it's really tough to get an advantage. And for those also listening, that it's 3 out of 5 each set up to 11. You got to win by 2. So sometimes you'll get some marathon first setters. And did I leave anything out in terms of the background there?
No, I think you got it. I think, you know, when I talked to you yesterday, you say you're not an expert, but I think you've pieced together everything pretty well from who you've talked to and observing. It's tough. Like you said, there's no standings you can find anywhere. It's sometimes tough to pick off exactly what's going on. But there's definitely relegation, like you said. There's group play. And although it does go on all day, it's not like a player's playing at midnight and then playing at 6 in the afternoon all the time. It's definitely staged in a way where, you know, it's one group to the other. And I tend to stay away from that first group more so than I like these second and third stages.
Yeah. Is it for the same reasons I was alluding to?
Yes, exactly. It's like, it's almost, to put it in a way, it's like betting on the Red Sox, Yankees. Like, anything's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen. Unless I can get like a really good price, but you can't anymore on one of the guys. It's just a coin flip. And, you know, it's good. It's good competition, but it's tough to bet on.
Yeah. I need to make the parallel of like, you know, would you bet on LeBron versus like Giannis 1-on-1, or would you bet on like, you know, I'm trying to think like of a Devin Booker against like, you know, the first guy, third guy.
Marcus Smart.
Yeah, something like that. And then it's like, you might have to lay 250, but you know, what's more likely to pay, right? So, and that's the thing that's been fascinating. There's some pretty hefty money lines, especially those bottom tier guys that we like to frequent when we watch. And you know, like you said, these matches are 12 minutes or so, 12 to 15 minutes. And it's a quick, you know, hey, if you lay $4, it's a, you know, 25% return on your money, if you will. And, you know, it's maybe it's worth it, that kind of thing. So how have you approached these money lines? Because I imagine you're not laying a lot of hefty money lines in baseball per se, but I would imagine you're more inclined to do it here.
Exactly. And it was like my radar went off instantly when I wanted to do it. You know, my brain said, no. But, you know, I'm coming around to the idea of laying, you know, more than minus 350. I did it yesterday. And it's just one, like you said, you have to do it. The books have corrected where they're going to put the line out there. But I'll tell you this, you're laying 5-1. But if you're watching it, the guy has a way better chance of winning than 5-1 odds. Like the true odds on some of these matches should probably be, you know, almost minus what, 1800 or something crazy like that. So you got to look at the value within that. And it's tough to talk about value when you're laying a giant money line, but when you're watching it and you're sort of looking at the true odds on it, you know, sometimes it's not that bad. And throwing it in a parlay, if you have the option, is obviously the way to go. And I tell people, you know, in any sport, if you're laying a big money line because you like somebody, you know, don't go and seek out a second person to put in there because you like that first one. If you have the option to do an open parlay, which a lot of these books offer now, stick them in there, wait until you find another one and add to it then. You don't have to always seek out something that's not nearly as strong or that you even was even on your radar to begin with just to fill in a parlay. So that's a little advice I can give when it comes to this, if we have that option for parlays. But otherwise, you're going to have to lay it on some of these, but you're going to win money, period. I mean, so far, so good, right?
Yeah, and that's the fascinating part about this. It's just such new territory for basically everyone. I mean, I don't think there's been like sharp handicapping and ping pong until, you know, now, so to speak. And I just think it's been really cool to watch. Now, you know, and you kind of wake up to some results. So there are some crazy, you mentioned laying some big money lines are this guy Vonnen, right? So there's a guy with the last name Vonnen who's kind of middle of the pack in his group. And he is what, lost like 22, Georgie or Gregory, he's lost like 22 in a row, but he's good. He just is in a really good box and he just can't get a win. So some of these, there's some inflate, you know, you might want to perceive as value, but if he can't win, he can't win. Cause it is real. If you think about it, it's really like a true outcome. When you play five set, it's one-on-one. So I like the individual nature of it all. I like the immediacy, like you mentioned, it's like 10 to 15 minutes. And then, it's just like the strategy and then the head-to-head components of matchups are more favorable for certain guys. And there's just like an authenticity to it because like golf, you're on your own, right? You don't have teammates to lean on. And it's just like a really, because this level of play makes it more intriguing, I think, than the high level. High level is more entertaining to watch, but this stuff's more fun to bet, I would say.
100%. It's entertaining. It's fun to watch. And it's like you said, I mean, I think it's up to 25 in a row now.
Oh, man.
This time we're taping this. And 13 of those were 3-0, right? And like you said, he wasn't terrible. So that's another thing. If you, the one thing you do have access to is past history, right? You can see past results on certain sites. And you got to be careful with the relegation thing because you can see a guy like him losing 25 in a row. You don't know that he might have got sent down and all of a sudden he's kicking butt and you don't know why. And so you got to be careful with that. But it's the human aspect gets me all the time. Like there's certain guys that just, you can tell give up. And certainly it's one of those, you have to watch in my opinion to really get a feel for some of these guys, because like you said, they're human. They're not professional athletes. They're humans, like just like all of us. And it's ping pong in a room. Like if they get irritated, they're going to be pissed and they might do something, right?
Yeah, you'll hear some yelling. You'll hear some yelling from a court over if you're listening to the audio. And like the dudes are like you and I. I mean, there's some guys you're like, man, this is like, they're just hanging out talking over ping pong. You're wondering how competitive it is. And other times they're all into it. It's a lot of fun. I think I've enjoyed the aspect watching it. Okay. So what are some, like you mentioned you laid, so what are some kind of like general betting sort of philosophy? You said, like, you've waited a while, you're not forcing plays. Like, what are some other philosophies you have? My whole thing is, like, don't get caught up, and you and I were texting about this, don't get caught up too much in revenge. I mentioned that they play each other so much, like the revenge factor, if you will, the narrative is, like, not really applicable. I thought you brought up some stuff that kind of opened my eyes to sort of, like, the fatigue factor. That's something I didn't really put my finger on that you've opened my eyes to.
Yeah. So, and it comes sort of from, I've always had an angle in sports, especially baseball and basketball, of how do you do going into an off day? How do you do coming out of an off day? So I've always had that in my head. And so that was in my head looking at this, like, how many days in a row do they play? And I haven't found rhyme or reason. It's not like you play three, get one off. There's really nothing there. So sometimes, and like, for examples, and I'm terrible with names, but Kozelenskov, is that how you say his
name? Kozelenskov. I'll look it up, but I got to see it. Yeah, I know exactly. Dmitry Kozelenskov or something like that.
Right. You look at him over the last week. He's played a ton. I think it's like 7 days in a row, right? But he basically takes every other day off. And what I mean by that, right, he lost every game on May 10th, May 12th, May 14th. Right. And in between that, he plays pretty good. And so going into those off days, he does great. Right. When I say off days again, I mean just the days that he basically shows up but doesn't even play. I mean, he's losing 3-0 in a lot of those. Then, you know, coming out of it, he looks good. Like May 5th, he ended 4-1 off that day. Right. And then May 6th, he comes in, goes 6-1. He had an off day in between. So in between that, he goes 10-2. I'm not looking to bet on him, though. I'm looking to fade him on those every other days. So if he's playing well, the next day he's taking it off. It just is what it is. I don't see it as a coincidence anymore after 10 days of looking at it, and it's just so cut and dry between watching it in the numbers that he fatigues. It's more than fatiguing if you watch him. It just looks like he's there going through the motions, and then he'll flip the switch the next day. So those are things that I don't think are baked into the number. I don't think people – no books are looking into it in depth like that. But little things like that I think you can really hone in on. And, again, don't try to get cute and bet him and then don't bet him. Hone in on what you know is 100%. And three straight every other days of losing every single game is pretty good. So you fade him every other day and you do all right.
See, I feel he's like very, he's young, and I think he's just kind of like raw. Like, I think he's got some game, but I think he like goes for the home run shot a lot. And then frankly, a lot of these guys do. And I feel like he's going to be good.
Yes. Yeah. I agree with you on that.
But so we talk about the different leagues, like the different groups, like the worst group is quite an adventure to watch, right? So the Vasilevskis, the Basmanovs, the Babkin, and then Pandor, who's really struggled at times. And I'm not going to lie to the people listening, like, it is like sometimes they just can't return a serve. Like, they're just like, they hit in the net all the time. Now I'm sure it's incredibly more complicated than it looks on the internet when you watch, but you wonder, some guys struggle, other guys can't. And look, there's spin on this stuff. I mean, it's not easy. But some guys, it's just like it's an adventure to watch some of these matches.
Yep. And you know, it really is. And what's sort of gross about it too, because this is by the end of the day, and I don't know how often and if you've ever watched it, they have that little table with the quote unquote referee, and it's not even an electronic scoreboard. It's the old school flip the number. And then they have those two cardboard little stanchions, the Betfly stanchions that they
throw
their, like, butterfly. Yeah. That they throw their soaking wet towel into too. And like they're sweating and they never change it or anything like that. So by the end of the day, these guys are terrible. They're in there sweating like all over everything. And it's a train wreck to watch, like you said.
Yeah. Especially in a day and age with COVID, you see things a little differently now, but it's a lot of fun. And actually, I mean, there's a lot of matches I'll watch that I don't have. You know, it's just like, it's really cool to watch, especially the high level. And then if you go over to like the Ukraine, some of those leagues, the Setka Cup and stuff. There's some like awesome stuff. So I think people should go check it out just to watch like cool sports and something that's a little different. But it's these dudes are pretty impressive. So in terms of like the betting philosophy, like would you rather? I mean, this is like all. I mean, it's kind of a dumb question because it's so dependent on who we're talking about. But some of these are like big money lines are based on the opponent being just fade material, and the others are being based on like the talent of the guy, of the player, of the guy you're betting on. So which would you rather like sort of lay and focus on if you have a big money line or even just a big play?
In this league, I 100% want to bet on a guy failing than succeeding, right? So, I mean, we know the bad guys are going to be bad. So I'll lay a money line against a really bad guy. I'm not laying a money line because I like the guy that I'm betting on. I just think there's a way better chance that the guy he's facing will completely fall on his face, more so than the better guy definitely giving an A performance, if that makes sense.
So I'm glad you said that, because in the middle of the night, a guy last name Vasilevsky was laying about 450 against Safonov. And Safonov's been kind of like the punching bag of that bottom group. But Safonov won the first set 14-12. The second set, I believe, the same score, 14-12. And then he swept him. So as a plus like 300 dog, swept the match. Now, it's very rare. He'd been losing a bunch. You know, but like you're also like laying big lumber with a guy who's not very good. In this case, it'd be Vasilevsky.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's a head scratcher.
It is. And I don't think you're going to get rich casing big dogs in this league. I just don't think like you're going to get them because there's times where you'll see really good guys that they just checked out. It seems like they lost two in a row. They lost 3-0, which they never really do. They have one more match left, and maybe they're going into an off day and they're a big favorite. I'll bite on the dog there, you know, but it's really situational betting, like big time in this situational betting to me when I'm taking a dog. There's going to be a lot of good reasons behind it, none of which is the talent for the underdog, if that makes sense, right? So it's always fading the talent rather than betting on the talent for me.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the live betting part, I'm kind of disappointed we took forever to get into this, because I think this is such a huge part of it, is the live betting, especially if you have these big favorites who lose the first set. So when you're playing like six matches in a day, I imagine fatigue's a big component of this. And you're thinking, oh, it's just ping pong. How much can fatigue? But go watch. They're running around a lot, because it's not just like hit, winner, right? It's long rallies. And part of the art of these rallies is making the other guy run. So think of like a competitive tennis match where you're dinking and then you're hitting a lob shot or just putting it deep and the guy has to run back. Obviously, it's not the same ground to cover in table tennis than regular tennis, but it's the same concept as short spurts, and these guys get tired, and you can imagine sort of the stamina and your fatigue factors into like your art of the shot. And I would be there's a gamesmanship to it, and I think so. A guy may be pacing himself if he's facing an inferior opponent and lose game one, and then sort of buck up. And I think you can find value on big favorites that lose the first set.
Absolutely, yep, you got to remember, there's no ball boys either, guys. Like, they chase the ball after each point. They go and get the ball. So it doesn't sound like much, but you're playing a point, you turn around, you're getting it, and you get right to it. It's not like, you know, baseball, say, where there's 30 seconds in between a pitch. They go chase the ball, come right back, serve it right up, and go. It's really nonstop. And I mean, you can just see it on them. Yeah, maybe a lot of it's the booze coming out. Who knows? But they're sweating. They're getting a good workout. And when you get to live bet, like you said, so even within, if a favorite gets down early, the line adjusts a lot if they're down one set. And it's, you know, we see it a lot where people come back. You lose the first set and they come back and win easily. Where it really gets crazy is in the fifth set, where it's 2-2. If a guy goes up, say, 4 points to two, now, even if it was the favorite that's down 2 points in that fifth set, he's like a 300 dog. Like the swings are gigantic, and you just got to try to get that play in before the next point, because it's always fluctuating, and that comes down to where you're betting it and all that. But there's definitely money to be made. If you're a professional who live bets, and I know that's a whole, probably the biggest thing coming now is, you know, really professional bettors who only bet live. You could do some damage in this league, I feel like, right? Don't you feel that way?
I would agree. And I think that's the cool component to this. And I guess it's, you know, obviously they're similar to tennis betting, but we talked about the aspects you like. I think another aspect is there's no clock. So a guy can be down 10-2, right? And the match is to 11 or the set to 11, and he can come back and win, right? So
yep.
There's just, now obviously there's a reason the guy's up 10-2 and it might get to like 10-5, 10-6, and then the guy wins. But I just think it's been fascinating. Maybe I'm just in withdrawal of other sports, but I've really enjoyed, and you mentioned like the money line fluctuation, and I think that's really important. So like in set one, if a guy's up 5-2, a -250 favorite, he's probably going to be like -220 still in the match, right? But obviously the swings on each point, the volatility in set five is so drastic because there's less time left. It's just like NBA or NFL or anything like that. When there's early in the game, obviously if Alabama goes down 7-0, the game line has only changed a little bit versus like the end of the game. So it's just, but I think the human element, and I think the fatigue factor when I talked about earlier, is just a guy maybe kind of taking things easy. I mean, look, all sports, they're not robots. It's not played in a computer. Like, you don't go all out on every point, right? You're up 10-1 and a guy hits a shot, you're not going to go diving for it. But if it's 10-10 in the fifth set, you're going to go diving for it. So it's very simple kind of logic. And you can, and the, but the money lines, I mean, obviously, like, the live lines can't be exact. I mean, they're probably not as fine-tuned as you would think, right?
Right, exactly. And like, if you're really into the algorithms of live betting, I can guarantee you that these are so far off, and they're just hoping that people aren't spending the time to do this. But like you said, I think it's almost like they just created a new sport out of thin air in my eyes and in my world. Basically, that's what they just did. I mean, I know of the sport, but betting on it, it's just really cool. And I know people are thinking and rolling your eyes, just hear it all the time. Oh, why would you ever bet it? Just, first of all, you know, pump your brakes, relax, have some fun with your life. Don't be so always analytical and by the book, and try it. That's all I'll say. Just try it, and I guarantee you'll have some fun with it, win or lose. You don't go betting, 2% of your bankroll or 3% of your bankroll on every bet. Just have some fun with it, and I guarantee you'll laugh. I guarantee you'll have fun. And if if you put some time and effort into it, you could definitely make money. I think it's really easy to find spots with certain guys. You'll come across your favorites, and I totally agree with you. I like betting on the lesser people than the better people. So,
yeah, I mean, I agree. And it's funny. I was talking to Purdom, and he was like, oh, I watched this one guy describe him. And I was like, oh, it's so-and-so. He's like, yep, that's exactly what. You kind of get a feel for the stuff. And he's like, so you weren't into this at all. I'm like, no, I just watched a couple screens. And it's really fun to watch, and there's nothing else to do, so to speak. And it's, you get to know these guys and their tendencies, and you're like, if you've watched sports in your life, right? And you're sort of a cerebral player, if you will, or super cerebral fan, you start to notice things like, oh, that guy's backhand's pretty bad. He favors it. Or other guys sort of have their approaches. They're like almost one trick ponies. Like, I think there's this guy, Alexei Yanchayev, who likes to hit a couple deep baseline shots, and then sort of like when he can tell his opponent's going to hit a soft backhand, he runs around the side of the table and sets up the forehand. There's that approach. Yeah. There's this guy, Volkov, who's, I don't know, I'm going to guess like 6'4". He's really tall, and he can get to anything. So he doesn't go for a lot of kill shots. He just perpetuates the rallies. And obviously the rallies are, tough shots, dinks and all that. So eventually it's sort of his game plan is his opponent is going to hit it in the net or hit it out of bounds because he can get to anything. So he just keeps the rallies alive. And that obviously increases the chances of an unforced error, even a forced error by his opponent. So everyone sort of has their different, approaches and styles, just like anything. Like in the NFL, some teams are a running team, Chiefs are an air attack. So like anything, there's sort of, blueprints to their success or game plans and tendencies. And it's just fun to sort of, and again, it's short, obviously, in this day and age, quicker is better. And I just enjoy it. And you can kind of handicap a matchup.
Yeah. And you know, what's good is they play so much every day that it's almost like you're getting a whole season in a week, right? Like you can see him 30 times in a week and really get a feel for him rather than, okay, I remember this guy last week. You know, if they played
right
a week or something
right
like that, you wouldn't be into it. But you could really get to know them in a short period of time because of the amount they play. And you mentioned Yashinev, which is one of my favorite guys to bet on. Like, he beats guys he's supposed to beat. He beats them 3-0. And what I really like is when you look at his losses, it's not like he loses to one or two people all the time, meaning like there's some hole in his game where people can exploit it. His losses are sort of like, okay, he lost to him once, and it's sort of like, okay, he was up against the guy that was playing really good that day. And so he stayed consistent. I think he's one of the most consistent players down in that level and probably my favorite guy to bet on for his ability rather than fading guys, you know, for their effort.
So I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to ask you some of your favorite players, and he absolutely is one of my favorites. He's like in the top three because you know you're getting max effort on every point, and you know he's going to come prepared. There's a lot of guys who have a lot of mental mistakes. He doesn't have many at all. He's very focused, very reliable, very just like professional. He's a young kid, but he's a very professional. Like I like betting on his matches. To your point, I think it's well said. He wins the matches he's supposed to, and ironically, he's playing right now against Viktor Ivanov, and he was about a -230 favorite, I want to say. And Yanchayev won the first two sets. That's another part about live betting. A guy goes up 2-0, and if it's a competitive player, usually the dog wins game three. And I say usually, obviously there's a lot of 3-0s, but you can kind of look for it, right? Just, and that's one thing. And I think this is all of sports. Like, you know, you remember what you last saw. Just because a guy dominates the first set 11-1 or 11-4, don't think he's going to dominate the rest of the match if the game line was about to pick him. There's a lot of times they're down 9-3 and they're like punting to the next set because they're pacing themselves. They have to win 3 out of 5, and some point spreads are based on games, but
right,
not all. So a lot of times there's gamesmanship because each quarter or each set, like it doesn't matter if you lose 11-9 or 11-2, it's the same. So just because there could be a lopsided first set, like I'm looking at a box score right now, a guy lost 11-2 the first set, won the next set 11-3. So there's a lot of kind of pacing oneself, but both these players, because it is and again, to your point, there's six matches in a day. So if they're pretty fatigued and you're down 9-2 and you're like, all right, let's live to fight another set here. I'm not going to come all the way back and expend all that energy. So there's definitely some handicapping along those lines. Another guy I love to bet was actually playing right now. And he might be, I think he's number one on like my preferred betting, is Igor Pulatov. Very similar kind of reasons. You know what you're getting with him. He's solid, gets to every ball, and just reliable. Just a very reliable player. Now he's a couple notches above Yanchayev, so he'll lose a couple here and there, but man, he is steady Eddie.
He is, and he's relentless too. If you watch him, it's like he wants the pace is important. He wants to go and max effort. Again, there's not many guys with max effort that you see, but those are two of my top two. There's plenty of guys that, you know, are good. Like the confusing thing for me, and it's the tough thing, is like what's his name, Tershkin.
Tershkin.
Freshkin, yeah. When I first started betting on him, he was great. He was 10-1, and then like he went 4-4 or something. But you know, I was late to start betting on him. I start betting on him. He goes 4-4. I lose a little money in the next day. Then the wheels came off, and he just lost 16 of his next 17, 21 of 24. You know, and it's like, what happened? And so I just can't win with him anyway. But there's a lot of that, which tells me either there's something going on in their life because all of a sudden they're a really good player and there's no relegation. And then they just, you know, for 3-4 days, Now, because you guys got to remember, when we say like losing 16 of 17, that's only a few days. It's not like it's a three week
right.
losing streak. But there's something there. To go from 10-1, you know.
I don't know. See, my assessment of him, he's in a good league, right? He's in a good group play. I just think he's I think he's inconsistent. So he has great like sets, but it's tough to win 3 out of 5 against good players when you're not consistent. And that's really what a lot of this comes down to. Like, you'll see winning shots by a lot of players, but can they preserve rallies and then hit the winning shots, or preserve rallies just to outlast the other guy to an unforced error? And I think that's the key, because there's so much spin on these balls and there's so much heat on the and speed on these balls. Like, I think Trushkin's, I think eventually he'll be relegated one group and then he'll be a really good bet on guy. I just think he's a little out of his element and playing above his head right now. That's my assessment. Now, maybe I wasn't watching when he was winning matches, but I think he's just kind of like a notch below when you're talking about 5 sets.
It's funny. I have one note next to his name in my book, and it says, wait for relegation and pound him.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you that it's just a little bit now, but I've seen sparks of him a while back. And I know, like you said, when he gets down in competition, he'll be pretty good. But would you agree there's a lot more painful people, if you will? Like, there's a lot more guys where you just like, why am I putting my money on him again? I can't believe it. Right? There's a lot more.
So the guys who burn me a lot, I got to think about this. There's a few out there, I'm not going to lie. You get it's probably the first impression thing. And you're like, why do I keep, it's like definition of insanity.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Some of that top level, I had to learn the hard way on those top levels. So like the top tier guys, the Abramov, if I'm pronouncing some of these names, I apologize. The Shirakov, like that level of guys is really Merslikin and then Chenskov. Those four guys, like I'll see him. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's sick. And let's just say he wins 3-1. The 3-1 was like probably like a 12-10 win and like an 11-8 win. Like, so it comes down to a couple points and he could have lost. So you have this like, and he is a great player, but then you learn the hard way he's playing other studs as well. And that these, the margin of error. So I had to learn the hard way. Some of the, I just was too attached to some guys because they were so good. And sometimes you've been watching the lesser league, the lesser competition play. So you think this guy is like amazing. And then you're like, wait a minute, the guy he's playing is also amazing.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. What's his name? Mashenkov? Is that how you pronounce it?
So there's Chenskov. There's Chenskov. And then there's also Merslikin. I believe his name is Dmitry. So I think he's the best one, because I think when he goes head to head with those other guys, he's always at least a small favorite. He's tall, black hair.
Yes.
And Chenskov is too. And Chenskov's intense. I mean, some of these guys are built like rugby players or linebackers. It's awesome to watch them go. And they're fast and they get the hand-eye coordination is incredible.
Unbelievable.
So at the top level, it's just amazing to watch. And then the lesser is not so much. But it's so the who are some of the guys that like you find most painful to bet?
Yeah, and before that, cause you see us sort of tripping over some of the names. And we just had this conversation right before we went on air with this was some books accidentally put wrong names up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that you'll think that you're betting on it. You see the matchup, and you sort of have to make sure and double check a couple sites and make sure you're betting on who you are, because then it's just the discretion to the book on how they want to grade it. But I see spelling mistakes all the time, and I'm
sure.
Like, am I really betting on this guy? And we're talking not just in the middle of the name, but some of the names you can say, okay, whoever was typing this up is trying to sound out the name in his head and he doesn't have it in front of him and he didn't put that Y or the Z at the beginning of his name, So just be careful. Make sure you're betting on who you are, because there's a lot of similar names, as you know. But painful-wise, that Mashenkov, I mean, when he's on, he looks really good. But when the wheels fall off, it's all day long. If he has a match where he was up 2-0 and loses, or even up 2-1 and loses, early in the day, fade him. Like, but at the same time, like, you look, I think it was May 12th, 1-6 in a row, only one went to 5 sets, He was dominating, smashing it. Everything was going well for him. But then I've seen him down two sets and just smash returns 10 feet off the table. Like, just stand there, swing, and it's just like, like, over the guy's head, not a care in the world. And you just see the ref sort of leaning there on, like, slumped over with his hand on one hand, flipping the things, don't even look. Just, it's so, like, you could tell that sometimes guys just give up. And I would say the refs aren't there to say, okay, you can't do that. You know, like, if you saw that in tennis, the referee would get up and say, you know, what are you doing? You can't just smash returns into the stands. Wouldn't you say the refs sort of have zero to no really?
We should clarify there. Most of them are just not refs. They're other players right. That are filling in, doing the scoreboard. So they're not like officials and supervisors. They're just kind of third party to like change the scoreboard, to manually, you know, do it. Sort of like intramurals right. Back in the day. And then occasionally you'll see, like, I think there's a couple females that help out and contribute. And so, and I know they're not, they may be playing a different circuit. I'm just not familiar, but they're definitely not playing in this league. So, right. Yeah, but I should clarify. So there's Menchikov, and then there's also like, Mertzkali. Menchikov is in sort of like the middle of the pack groups. And then the other guys yep. Is like the Abramov and, Shirakov. That's a different guy. So I think my favorite guy to watch, because it's so, I mean, he's theatrical. And well, let me ask you, I don't want to give mine away. Who's your favorite guy? This guy's my absolute favorite to watch.
Oof, it's a tough one. My favorite to watch. I like Smirnoff a little bit because of his beard and his bun and everything.
he's sneaky quick on everything.
Yeah. So I like him. He sweats a lot though. And because we're in the time that we're in, he's constantly going to his towel and it bugs me out. It's like, why don't someone just get a towel rack, just a simple right. Towel rack to hang the towel in. But anyway,
mine is Vladimir Nemashkalo.
That was going to be another one. And then the other one I can't pronounce, the guy that begins Zhuly, the Zublian guy though.
Oh, Zolyabin. Yeah, he's really good. He's won like 20 in a row. He just got promoted, Zolyabin. He's frustrating for me because he was dominating his competition and just wouldn't dominate. I mean, I get, you know, like I'm expecting domination start to finish, but he's so good and he's a very good bet-on guy, but he'll yeah. Let some guys hang around for too long as far as I'm concerned based on his talent level. But I think the Nemashkalo is just, first of all, just so people understand, he's the oldest of them all, I believe. Some guys on Twitter call him Grandpa. And he brings his arm back and just wails on the ball like the third or fourth point. Because someone's broken down to me. They're like, he's too old to hang out like and do these long rallies because he's just not going to last. So he just cocks his arm back and fires. And it is awesome. And everyone just kind of laughs, but he's good. He's like in the bottom half, but not the top of the bottom half, if you will. There's like 10 groups. He's probably like the seventh group and he's good. And and the guys who he faces are just hope he hits it out of bounds because it's cooking and he's so entertaining and he's laughing a lot. He just seems like, he's like the dude I want to grab a beer with as well.
He's so easy to root for. He's the guy that like I would pay to hang out, you know, to go watch him and pay to hang out with him. Definitely he reminds me of, like, if you remember the old school pitching machines where that like metal arm comes up
he hangs out on the bottom left corner of the table, so just setting up his right hand, and if you hit it, because a lot of times there's strategy, you want to hit it to the other guy's backhand and low so the guy can't rip a winner. Very few guys can rip a winner from that angle. And so he kind of hangs over there and makes you try to rip a winner down the line because he's giving you the entire table. And if you do, you might hit it out and he might get to it, but you're right. He's got that big wind up like the pitching machines. And it is, and look, I can't bet any of his matches because if he's on, you can't beat him. And if he's off, it's, you know, cause it's a roll of the dice essentially is when he comes out fiery. And it's literally serve, return, ball, like hit, and then here it comes.
What happens
Yeah. But you're right. I would pay to watch him. He's my favorite, and he just seems like a fun guy to be around. He's like, everyone's laughing, like the score guy. But he's good. He's not like a joke. He's not like, you know, the butt of their jokes, but everyone's sort of, he's entertaining to everyone, I would say.
Yeah. And if you're listening to this, you hear us. I mean, we're having a good time talking about this. We're laughing. And I think that is more important than anything, right? You can watch this. You can laugh. It's sports. And I think you really need that right now with how depressing everything has been around, right? That
right.
If anything, you pay a little money, you bet a little money, and you're going to have a laugh. You have it, you know, you go on Twitter and talk about it. There's plenty of people talking about it. And, you know, just for entertainment factor and to get out of your head for a little bit, this will 100% do the trick for you. And you can make money doing it too. So I think all of those things are a big reason why this has taken off the way it has.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to Nick Bogdanovich and William Hill, and I did a story on sort of what people are betting on. It was iRacing and some other stuff. And he goes, ping pong's the star of the show. He goes, it's amazing. Some guy hit like a 10-team parlay for $5 in the 20 grand or something. But it's, and he said, I guess last weekend, I guess there were only a couple UFC fights that had more of a handle than like ping pong. Now it's not one ping pong match. It's the volume, to your point earlier. Right. There's basically three or four matches every half hour. So, and there's only like 5 hours it's dark all night. And then there's playoffs. So there's the schedule. And then even there's like an hour and a half window twice a day that they leave open. And it's based on like the playoffs, based on the result that happened earlier in the day. So obviously you can't put them up because you don't know how the games are going to, but once the results are determined, and then they'll put some playoffs up and it's fun. And you're right. It's such a good point in terms of the entertainment component to this because I do enjoy it. And first of all, it's a new sport and something that's so foreign. So I'm like very impressed by the quality of play. And like we talked about some of these top level guys, their hand-eye coordination, it's incredible. You'll see some awesome efforts, guys getting the balls. And it's cool and it's quick, 10, 15 minutes, whatever. And then there's just some characters like Namaskalo is one of them. And there's some other guys, like I even like Kirilenko, even though he's not as crazy as Namaskalo, but he like makes fun of himself and he's in that bottom, that group, but he goes for it and he goes for winners and he like, I don't know. It's just some of the stuff I've really enjoyed watching.
I agree.
And there's some outfits and there's some outfits out there. So basically, just so everyone listening, you have to wear dark colored or red colored. And so the scoreboard is shown by red or blue. So the viewer right. can, you know, it's kind of like boxing when they say like so-and-so's in the blue trunks, so-and-so's in the white trunks or whatever. So you have that sort of, explanation and it's hilarious with some of these. And I'm like, that guy wears it every day. He must have a bunch of off pink shirts. That's like his version of red that he wears every day because they're dripping with sweat to your point. And I mean, the exercise, I mean, it's incredible. Some guys, you know, aren't as good a shape as the others, but I really encourage people to at least check it out and just sort of like observe and kind of be entertained by, and just impressed. I'll flip around and watch X Games and, I'll be like, how did I do this on a skateboard or whatever it is on the skis? Oh, yeah. Anything that's foreign to me like this, because we all play ping pong at some point in our lives, but we played it like basic. We're not holding the racket the right way and whatever it may be. I just thoroughly enjoyed it, and it scratches an itch occasionally as well.
Scratches the itch, absolutely, and it's like you said, it's a lot of fun. I wish, and I don't know why it hasn't happened yet, I wish someone would come up with a website with the standings and relegations to look at. I think I really wish I had that to just sort of clarify things. Because I'm not going to lie, the first week I watched it, I thought it was like two teams, the blue team and the red team, and those were playing each other. And then I realized, okay, they're switching off. It depends. But, it's fun. And I remember back in the Olympics when I was betting the Olympics, handball is another great thing to watch. And I know you get the views on that. Handball is, I think, fantastic. Those guys are beasts. 6'7", just whipping the ball 95 miles an hour at a goalie with no pads on is a lot of fun. And I think this gives us a time to sort of open our eyes up to, you know, not just the four major sports, but there's a lot of stuff going on out there. And it's like entertaining, right? Like you said, we all grew up watching sports. for entertainment before we started betting on it. And you can get that entertainment factor in a lot of laps and a lot of other places too.
One final question for you. How many guys do you think you could get at least 2 points off of in this?
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Because there is that element you watch and you're like, how good is this guy? Like, I think I could get a point or two off him.
Sure. Probably. I could probably get, oh, man, Valken. What's his name? I know Pander.
Yeah, Pander. I definitely think I can get a point or two off of.
I know. I probably wouldn't even have to make contact, and I could get a couple points because he's gonna give me 4 or 5 unforced errors without a doubt.
And if he thought you were a real player, he's probably gonna do that, right? Like he if you didn't realize how easy he could take it now, because he's right. Trying to hit a spin serve. I mean, a lot of those times he's trying to hit a spin serve and like we'll botch it. I right. Definitely think Pander.
Vonen?
No chance. Like Vonen's good, man. I know he's lost like 25 in a row, but there's like he gets to everything. He's good. Like because sometimes these guys play, and then, you know, I'm just telling our listeners, like, you know, 8 feet behind the baseline, and they're whipping it back and forth. And Vonen's one of those guys. The other guys can't. Like, the worst league, like, I think I could probably get a point off of Vasilevsky. I think Pander, Vasilevsky, and Babkin are the three I think I could get points off.
Yeah, Babkin's terrible. Babkin's terrible, and especially if you catch him at the end of the night. you could probably talk him. He's the one that, like, if you're willing to talk trash and take a couple off the face, that you could probably get to 5 or 6 against him and get him really upset and hope to get to 5 or 6. But to think that if anybody thinks they can just go show up and beat these guys, it's just not happening.
Unless no, it's the pro league. Now it's not like you said. It's like the MEAC or something like that. Yeah, totally. These guys are awesome. I mean, like, we're talking about the worst of the worst. Maybe I get a point or two. But again, we don't know how fast it's coming. It could be just, you know, total spin and we're just not seeing it. I think we have a good idea of stuff, but,
the spin is there. Like, you don't notice it because the guys get to it. But if they just were sitting there and hitting it and you see where it bounces and then where it lands off the table, you know, it's taken almost a 90-degree angle sometimes. And, you know, if I'm there, I'm gonna miss probably, what, 70% of those serves when they're really on with this.
Right.
Like, even making contact, you know. So
that's a great point.
Funny I think everybody it's funny everyone gravitated to this league, though, isn't it? I mean, there's betting options for everything, but I think the entertainment factor, like you said, instead of like watching, if anybody's seen the Chinese ones where it's just back and forth and, you know, anybody can win, this one is, I think it's entertaining, and that's why I think it's caught on.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, 3-point rallies, if you will. And you're so right about the spin, especially like the slow shots. Watch where it lands and the trajectory coming into the table and then where it goes after it hits the table. That's been incredibly impressive. Incredibly impressive.
I agree.
So, all right, man. Well, hopefully we whet the appetite of a lot of our listeners. Really, really appreciate your taking the time, sharing the wisdom that you've gleaned from hours and hours of watching this stuff. What's your setup like? You just watch on one laptop? What do you got?
It depends. If I'm really into it, I got my TV on it. Right. And then I'll have
okay, smart TV. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have the laptop going and then the iPad. And sometimes if I get crazy and I have like a crazy 14 parlay, I got the TV on too. And I've noticed that anything more than 3, just don't do it. You can't see anything. It's going so fast everywhere. You don't know where to look. And then you don't even know what the score is, but 2 or 3 at a time. I like that. I feel comfortable with that. And just kick back. Sometimes, you know, I move down to the man cave and then I might take a trip in the afternoon up to the couch in the living room. And then by the end of the night, maybe I'm, you know, watching in the bedroom because, you know, a lot of travel these days. So you're going to move around. But, you know, you got to be careful because if you get involved in this and think you're going to do it professional, I don't know if there's an off season, but I mean, you're talking 20-hour days, 7 days a week, and it's just, you got to be careful with that as far.
I would agree. Yeah. And you can get chasing like anything. So you got to be careful in those ones. But yeah, I have a similar man cave set up. I like the 2 laptops. Because I think it's easier, but I will go down to my man cave with a smart TV and set it up with the internet. And it's a lot of fun in that regard.
It is.
All right, my man. Thanks again, as always. Appreciate it. Welcome to the podcast. Good to have you on, and good luck with all the table tennis.
All right, man. You too. Have a good one.
Kicking is for losers.
All right. Thanks to Sean Harnish. Just a reminder, our coverage of The Last Dance is brought to you by State Farm. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Coverage is also brought to you by AT&T. So, yeah, we're covering the GOAT, Michael Jordan. That wraps up this weekend with two more hours. That was like a hard turn, Christina, from ping pong to the greatest NBA player of all time, arguably.
Just a little bit of a rough turn.
So what did you think? Do you want to go watch now?
I am now completely sold on ping pong. Never thought I would be, but now I am.
It's a lot of fun. I highly recommend it. On my other, one of my laptops here, I'm just watching. I mean, these guys are, in this case, 15 feet behind the table getting to every ball because, I mean, look, it's like kind of like a wiffle ball, right? Like, it doesn't like travel as fast as a racquetball or a tennis ball. So when a guy comes up swinging and wails on it, the guy returning can basically get to it, right? And so you see these like incredible extension of rallies because guys are lunging and getting it. So it's a cool sport. I'm into it, as you can tell from what you just heard. So I hope others can go check it out. Just at least enjoy it, not necessarily get action on it. But are you ready for The Last Dance to wrap up this weekend?
I am. I've been watching them as they release every week, and I'm excited to see it all wrap up.
Because this, as we talked about last week on the pod, this is foreign territory. But this is new kind of – you weren't born really until the Jordan era.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I didn't get to see this unfold as it actually happened. So for me, this has all been new information. So I'm really excited.
I remember in college, I went to, was it episode one of Star Wars? Because it was like the fourth one that came out. And I had watched Star Wars growing up as a kid, but I didn't know everything. Yeah. And my buddy was like, man, I would love to just to get to experience all this for the first time by you. And so that's kind of how I feel with you, like learning all about Jordan and Pippen must be fascinating. And it's a different approach than all of us who kind of grew up on it and are just picking bits and pieces. It's nostalgia for us, right?
I try talking to, my dad or some of my uncles who they all grew up watching this happen. So I tell them like, oh, did you see that? And they're like, yeah, Christina, we grew up with that. So it's all new information for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. When Jordan left to go play baseball, I mean, I was in high school. I didn't really fully get it. But now imagine imagine LeBron leaving for a couple of years to go play football or something. Like, this is hilarious if it actually happened.
Oh, I know. It's just a crazy concept.
Day and age of Twitter, especially. All right. Well, that's all I got. So really good catching up. Encourage everyone to go check out some table tennis at all levels, not just the ones we talked about, but hopefully our scouting reports made you chuckle a little bit, but hopefully we'll have more reports on sports returning. Maybe the light at the end of the tunnel is just around the corner, we hope.